It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the questions that may be keeping some of us up at night is this one. Are terrorists eluding U.S. surveillance? Recent reports indicate that the dark web, or undernet, is becoming a breeding ground for enemies of the United States. Sophisticated terrorist networks can be centered around the multitude of online resources not indexed by commonly used search engines. Carnegie Mellon University professor and network security expert David Brumley joins us now to talk about the dark web, a set of websites that are generally not found in Google searches and may offer illegal services. He's with us in Studio A. Dr. Brumley, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
And you can join the conversation with your questions or comments at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. I'm guessing that many of our listeners are not familiar at all with the term undernet. So what does undernet refer to?
Well, the undernet refers to the set of websites and things on the internet that aren't generally indexed by search engines like Google or Bing or Yahoo.
And how are terrorists able to use these to sneak around the internet or the undernet, I should say, or the dark web, as it is sometimes called, in order to elude U.S. surveillance?
Well, there's really two things going on. There's the set of websites that aren't indexed by Google, so you have to know how to get to them. And then there's a set of anonymity services, and one of the most popular is called Tor. And what this does is it provides you anonymity on the network. People can't learn if I connect to a website. The website can't learn where I'm coming from or who I am.
Why don't more people know about this?
Most people aren't going to have a use for it. So the people who are going to have a need for it are, of course, people like terrorists or people who want to buy drugs or people who want to buy hitmen. The other set of people who are going to need technologies like this are people who are like freedom fighters, or they're trying to get information out of censored countries securely. So there's actually good and bad uses for it.
And who created it or stumbled onto this way of going undetected on the internet?
Well, this technology has evolved over time. So for a long time, computer security researchers have been interested in privacy, to provide privacy to you and me. We don't want maybe corporations to track us. And the logical extreme of this is we don't want anyone to be able to track us. And so it's evolved over time to give us this sort of capability.
What are some of the online resources that are not indexed by commonly used search engines? You may have covered this earlier, but go through the gamut for us. What is out there?
So the most famous is called the Silk Road. And you can think of the Silk Road as like Amazon for illegal things. You can go on to
Amazon for illegal things.
It's a marvelous website. So you can go on, you can buy illegal drugs, you can buy credit card numbers, and you're going to buy them from sellers, and these sellers are even reviewed. I can click on it and see, you know, 99% of the people had positive feedback about their last transaction.
And you're saying marvelous in terms of you're in awe of it, but not necessarily saying that approvingly.
Not approvingly, just in the technology being used.
So are some terrorists then, in fact, able to go completely undetected on the internet or undernet or dark web, as it's called?
Well, what these networks are providing is anonymity. Now, of course, if you're on one of these networks and you slip up and use your real name or use something that may be used to identify you, then the game's over. But yeah, a variety of people are using these. You can go and buy arms, for example.
So if you play it right, you can be completely invisible.
You can be completely invisible. I went on last night, and it turns out, for example, you can hire a hitman, and it only costs about $10,000.
That's it, huh?
That's it.
That's the going rate. I would not have known that having not searched for that. So anything that you want to do that has some aspect of skullduggery to it that you do not want to be in any way detected or traced, have it traced back to your name, there is this way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now. Go ahead.
Well, in addition to the anonymity and the dark web, there's also things like Bitcoin that allow me to pay people anonymously. So traditionally, the best way to pay people anonymously is with cash, because cash isn't detectable. Credit card, of course, someone could go and see your credit card transaction. So there's even technologies to allow for payment of services.
how do they – how does it work? How is it that they're not able to go back to your address? That they, you know, that you're sitting there. You're at a computer screen in your house. That you have a – you have your own email address, web address. So wouldn't there be some way to trace it back somehow?
So they're using a cryptographic primitive called a mixed network. And so this is a little bit like if you wanted someone who's to not be able to follow you, if you got in a taxi cab and then went downtown and then got in another taxi cab and went to the south side and then got in another taxi cab and went to Squirrel Hill and then got in another taxi cab and finally went to your destination. Unless people could observe you going through all these different taxi cab stations, they would never know where you're coming from.
We are talking about the undernet or the dark web that it is called. Carnegie Mellon University professor and network security expert David Brumley is our guest talking about the dark web. Again, a set of websites that are generally not found in Google searches and may offer illegal services. He's with us in Studio A. You can join the conversation with your comments or questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Have you ever surfed the dark web? What did you find there? What were you perhaps looking for that you didn't want someone to know about? Share your story with us. We'd love to hear it at 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter and follow the at esspgh. Follow the conversation at #EPLive. We'd also like to entertain your questions about and concerns about who might be using the dark web at 412-246-2002. And one question I would have for you, David, is should those who are able to navigate the undernet be considered more sophisticated than the kind who are susceptible to being caught by the infrastructure set up, for example, by the NSA? Paint us a portrait of the person that is using the undernet or dark web, as it's called. I'm getting a picture of somebody who's a more sophisticated type of criminal or terrorist.
Well, the technologies aren't really suited for a novice user. They really are designed these days for experts. We'd be looking at a technologist, someone who understands technology. We'd be looking at someone who's very careful in what they do. Many people, you know, can't even get right not using the same password on multiple websites. The sort of person we're talking about would never make that mistake.
Can modern-day terrorists generally be made more aware? Are they more aware of the available technology?
They have to be. I mean, this is a resource that they could take advantage of. This is a resource for communicating anonymously, going and buying services, or just buying supplies.
And what about the information? You mentioned, you know, purchases and things like that. To what extent is there recruitment going on and just information, that ways of if you want to recruit people to your organization, for example, or you have jobs that you're trying to find people to do, to let them know that they're out there? What sorts of information is being exchanged on the undernet?
Well, I mean, there's pretty much everything. There's parts of the internet that could be used for anonymous communication between jihadists, if we wanted to be able to give a particular example. There's ones for buying particular services and finding, like, for example, a hitman. You could almost have like a Craigslist where you say, I'm looking for someone to do this. Now, of course, if you go out and say, I want to buy a hitman, you always have to make sure you're not meeting the person, the hitman in person, because then it could be an FBI agent or someone like that.
Someone posing as the would-be terrorist. And I want to ask you about what our government or what the NSA might be doing to be tracking all of this. We want to invite our listeners into the conversation, though, at 412-246-2002. And let's go to Tom in the South Hills with a question. Tom, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Very interesting conversation. I just had a question for your visitor. There has to be a starting point for this. There has to be some knowledge of how you get to these dark sites. And I'm just curious if you could talk about how that remains anonymous.
That's a good question. So the question is, how does actually getting the tools, how do people be anonymous about that? Really, they aren't. Really, they go out and they will go and download utilities. For example, you can go to Tor.com and download the Tor utility, and you don't have to be anonymous to do that, because there's a variety of legitimate uses for which you may want to use Tor. For example, you don't want people to track you. You want to use an email account anonymously for whistleblowing. You want to, in a country that has censorship, you want to reveal information. So just the fact that you're going to a site like Tor doesn't mean you're a bad guy. So you can go and download the things and then get on the internet.
Okay, so even if somebody traces, you know, even if somebody does a search and discovers that, whoa, they were looking for these sites, that doesn't necessarily – that can't implicate somebody in some sort of a crime necessarily.
It's not going to implicate them. Now, of course, you know, if someone is monitoring you and they see you download Tor and they see you do a Google search for the internet and they see you watch YouTube videos about how to get on the Silk Road, they may think that you're looking for something bad, and then they may decide to monitor you in other ways.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Bill in Lawrenceville with a comment. Bill, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment on why more people don't use Tor. And that's because Tor is set up so that it uses proxy sites all over the European Union. And a lot of them aren't in English. So unless you specify only the ones that speak English and you're careful about your spelling so that you're using European spelling, when you try to log into a site, it will automatically reflect back the language of the proxy server that you're using. And now you're screwed because you don't speak or read that language.
But couldn't you find somebody who does? That would be...
That's an awful lot of work for somebody to go through.
But
it's not something that a casual user is going to just pick up immediately if they're looking for mischief.
Well, let's put that question to our guest. I mean, is this, if you're going to all the trouble to get on these sites in the first, I mean, how much more trouble would it be just to find an interpreter?
Well, it's probably not a lot of trouble. So I think what the caller is commenting on is these utilities are somewhat hard to use and they require experts. So in particular, if you're going to a site that does auto detection of the language and then you're being routed through these network of taxi cabs and you end up in, let's say, Estonian, the web page may think you're really an Estonian and show you an Estonian version of their website as opposed to an English version. However, things like the Silk Road, most English speakers aren't going to have any trouble accessing.
Let's go to Joe in Johnstown with a question. Joe, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. You're on with our guest, CMU professor, network security expert, David Brumley.
Okay. We have a halfway house here in Johnstown, and a lot of the fellows from the halfway house will go over to the library and use the computers there. And I'm wondering, would this work from a, you know, from like, a, I guess, a third-party location like this, like a library or a workplace? Would these fellows be able to have that same anonymity or whatever the word is?
Anonymity, and that is actually a good question, Joe.
So a network administrator for like a library or someone at work could configure it to make it difficult to use something like Tor, so your average user maybe couldn't get up and running. An expert might be able to bypass it. That's a great question. These people could, in fact, be using them. You have to remember, these tools are designed not just to help terrorists, but they're also designed to try to help people in censored countries. And so people in censored countries also have similar problems where someone's trying to actively prevent them from using them. And so there's been a network of people and resources to actually make it so you can use them, even if your boss or the library is blocking it.
Now, assuming that most terrorists aren't dumb enough to use Verizon, for example, what means does the NSA have at its disposal to infiltrate technologically sophisticated terrorist organizations?
Well, so the National Security Agency is but one of many intelligence agencies, right? And they're specific.
So the CIA might be tracking these people, the FBI.
I mean, there's six intelligence companies that are the big six. So the CIA and the NSA and the FBI are the three that most people know about. So the NSA can also look at other things to try to determine whether someone's a terrorist or not. For example, even if all traffic is being routed through the Tor network, if someone's exclusively using the Tor network and never getting online and looking at websites, that may raise a suspicion factor, and then they may go talk to the FBI or the CIA to do then some human intelligence. So the NSA has a variety of different technologies and techniques.
So we can feel better about the idea that our government can track potential terrorists or those who are active in terrorist networks.
Yes. Things like PRISM are just one of many different technologies that the U.S. government has at its disposal to track terrorists and to track bad guys.
So it's just a matter of staying one step ahead.
It's a matter of staying one step ahead. And, you know, one of the best techniques in my experience is just the human factor. People slip up. They'll go onto something like the Silk Road and they'll use their real name in a transaction, or they'll go tell a friend that they're doing something and then that friend will go report it to the FBI. So there's a variety of other ways.
Carnegie Mellon University professor and network security expert David Brumley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Duquesne University professor who outed author J.K. Rowling. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.